Hey, everybody, this is Andy Marquette, and I am joined by my colleague, Lise McTague, and we are Les Geek Outcast. We are doing a fabulous geekery podcast, per usual, and this week we're going to be discussing a really fabulous book by author Becky Chambers. It's her debut novel, The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. Dun, dun, dun. Lise, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I should be asking you how you're doing.
I know, right? For those of you who haven't noticed, I am getting over some cooties. I was illin for a while, and I apologize in advance. I may have to take a quick break to go cough, but hopefully it won't be too long a break. Regardless, I am doing much better. It wiped me out, and now I'm back, and yay, we're going to geek out and talk cool things. That's what's important.
Awesome!
So, Lise, what's new in the world of cosplay? Aren't you working on something really cool right now?
I am working on something really cool right now. I'm working on a shield because I don't have enough cosplay shit around my house yet.
Y'all, it looks really cool. What did you call that? Tell me.
So it's from the games Elder Scrolls 6, or no, wait, Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, and it is the Dawnguard shield. Ooh. So in the game, you can join this faction of vampire hunters.
Well, of course.
And they have all this, absolutely. And there's all this really cool gear, and the shield is one of those things. And so at this point, you know, it's like I have the shield, and all I need to do is paint it, and I have that axe that I made. And I'm like, well, shit, I might as well just make myself some armor, and boom, I've got some Skyrim cosplay.
It's pretty freaking awesome, y'all. She showed it to me earlier, and I'm like, oh.
Well, and it's funny because it looks a little 80s right now because the foam that I use is like black and like yellow and green, teal.
I wasn't thinking 80s when I saw it, but now that you mention it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What was that crap that they used to put on their noses? That like neon, like
the zinc.
Yeah. I'll just put that stuff on and then go out with my shield, and it'll be all good.
Oh my god, your Duran Duran soundtrack in the background. Okay,
hell yeah,
sweet. All right, friends. So this week, as I said, we are going to be talking about Becky Chambers' debut novel, The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, which was published in 2015. It's a space opera, and as we'll get into it in a minute, this novel had an interesting genesis. She started writing it in 2012, basically, and she was working as a freelancer at the time. And as she was doing that, her work dried up, and she had to make a decision between continuing with her freelance, because, you know, woman's got to eat, or continuing with the book, because, you know, the muse. So what she decided to do was she started a Kickstarter and basically got some funding for like 2 months to finish the book, and she self-published it. In 2014, that's when she originally published it, and then a few months later, she got a call from someone she had met at Worldcon when she was in London, who was an editor at the publishing house Hodder & Stoughton. I think that's how you pronounce that. And they said they would love to pick it up. So, bum, 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 she went from being self-published, getting all kinds of attention, to landing a gig with a major publishing house in the UK. Did the publishing house want any changes to the book? And she said no. It went right to proofreading and to the Britishization of the American English. Because, of course, that's important, right? You know, mm-hmm. Writing to a totally different audience. So, what were the biggest influences on her writing? And she says Star Trek: The Next Generation came out when she was 3, and it was a huge part of her life. Another influence is Carl Sagan, and her mother. I did not know this, Lise. Her mom is an astrobiologist.
Oh well, that explains so much.
So the science in the series, the Wayfarer series, comes from her, basically. So I just thought, let's set the stage there, and I'm going to turn this over to you because, you know, coughing and stuff. But also, The book is amazing, and Lees does a really awesome job explaining why that is. Boom, Lees, take it away.
Well, I suppose I could give a small synopsis first.
Okay, that would be
fun. Let's jump into it. So the book takes place on a ship. And the ship is it's like a working ship, and they go from place to place, and they're one of a like small group of people who create wormholes between different planets. And wormholes are like the major way that people travel long distances within a short period of time. So you have this small ship with this like close-knit crew, and the book opens with the addition of a new crew member her name is Rosemary Harper, and she is going to be their clerk. So the Captain Ashby is the one who like decided that he finally had to get his crap in order and brings her on. And then almost immediately they get this giant job just like dropped in their laps. And this is like one of these jobs that can like make or break the career of everyone on this ship and allow them to like move up into like a higher tier and more complicated like wormhole building. Mm-hmm. The only kicker is that where they're building the wormhole to, well, you can't really build a wormhole to it. You can only build a wormhole from it. Because if you try to build a wormhole to it, shit could go sideways. Mm-hmm. And plus, there's this like big sort of galactic brouhaha going over this new entry into their like galactic federation. I can't remember what they're called, but they're not the Federation, and that's totally the Star Trek that you mentioned coming out.
Well,
but
they're trying to build into Taremi Ka space. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, the wormhole situation, because you have to like pay attention before you bust into somebody's space. You have to like kind of set up treaties. So right. There's a lot of those are the politics behind the wormholing. You know, you can't just be like, woo, space pirate wormholers.
Yeah, and you have to like pay attention to what's there. And the Taremi Ka home planet is in a more or less more volatile area of space. And if you try and bust into it, chances are you could just like basically screw up the entire area. So they have to take the long way around. They have to like actually get there and then build their wormhole out. And so most of the book is them getting there and like all the different things.
To a small mm-hmm,
exactly. Yeah. And all of the different things that happen to them and in and amongst the crew during their journey.
Let's talk. In terms of the, we've got I'm going to say Rosemary, but it could be Rosemary.
Yeah.
Rosemary is the clerk who has, you know, mm-hmm. she's escaping a past.
Right.
She's like on the run, and this is a perfect gig for her. It's on mm-hmm. board this ship, the Wayfarer, and, you know, she just
nobody
wants to like,
who
nobody
she
knows
is,
who she is, and it's all good. There, she's got the ship's diverse crew, Lovey, the ship's AI. Jenks and Kizzy are techs, and their descriptions of like the things that they're working on are amazing. Sissix mm-hmm. is one of the pilots. Corbin is the algaeist. You know, he's like developing algae and, you know, food and shit.
Yeah, and algae is a lot of what keeps the ship going. Like the propulsion
is a lot
of that is from
the
algae.
Which is like, mm-hmm. wow. And we've got mm-hmm. Dr. Chef, who is the doctor/cook. Ohan is a navigator. And Ashby, as you mentioned, the ship's captain. Let's talk world building. Because that's
the key
to this book and the series.
It really is. I mean, Becky Chambers is really masterful with her world building. And like when you were talking earlier, a lot of people, when you start talking about world building, you're saying they think setting, which is important. But really what she's done is it feels like she's taken these characters and she's built the world around these characters. So instead of being like, okay, you know, we've got this planet and this goes on here, she's like, no, we've got this kind of alien, this kind of person. And what would their environment look like? At least that was the feeling I got from reading the book. I could be completely wrong. I'm reading a whole lot into this, but it just feels to me like, you know, a lot of these aliens were conceptualized as people first and not as, you know, here's an alien race who feels no emotions and deals only with logic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I really love that aspect of things. And I love, love, love her treatment of the alien races, because they are not just human analogs with, like, you know, an extra arm or bumpy foreheads or what have you. They are incredibly diverse. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like any kind of life form that could exist. Becky seems to have, or Chambers seems to have somehow, like, imagined them and put them in this book. And I'm just in awe of her, like, alien species creation skills. Because, I mean, you and I have both written space operas. And I gotta tell you, I stayed away from other sentient races for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
That shit is hard to do.
Shit is really hard to do it well.
Uh-huh. And she has done it so well.
And the way they all interact. I mean, you and I had this conversation before. The book, actually, if you read it, it's there's not a whole lot of plot, of overarching mm-hmm. plot. You have, like, this thing that the Wayfarer is trying to accomplish, okay? That's the job. They've got the job. And then they have to get to the job. What's important here are the interactions between the characters. And I told you that I thought it felt kind of like it was like a TV series, or, you know, like Star Trek, like, you know, which yeah. is Becky Chambers is one of her fave things, Next Generation. It's built that way, is like, you know, as you're reading it, then you have like one chapter or two chapters based on certain character interactions, and then you go to a different character interaction, almost like it's a different episode per week. Like, here you are with this character interacting, and you get a little bit of that story, and then it goes into another story, but it all ties together through the characters. And she was interviewed about that, actually, about you know, the long way home, the long way to a small angry planet. And the interviewer noticed that it's very episodic and wanted mm-hmm. to know if that was intentional. And Chambers said that when she was writing it, it happened over the course of a few years. And what she actually had was a series of separate adventures and stories, which included these same characters. And it took her a while to realize that what she was actually writing was a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
When she realize that, she's like, she just ran with it. She's like, I went with it. So that's what it feels like. And that's why it's, you can't really say, oh my God, this overarching plot to save the galaxy, because it's not really part of it. There's so much going on in this world. This is one slice of that.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that. It's a space opera without, like, major galaxy changing events going on, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, when you say a road trip, it's like, that's exactly right. They're doing this thing, but it's all the stuff that happens along the way. That's the important stuff. Mm-hmm. And the road, like, their destination is almost incidental. I mean, yes, it does. We do get there, and it does happen, and there is, like, a climax and a denouement and all of that. But what I really loved about it is that this is a space opera, which is really about the people. And with this genre, with space opera, it's so easy to make it about the tech, about, you know, the aliens, about the worlds they're visiting. But this is about this, like, close-knit crew and how they work together and what happens when they don't, you know, and all that stuff in between.
Mm-hmm. There's 9 point of view characters in this book. So you're getting a whole diverse, literally, look through different characters' eyes. And you're getting a look at the interpersonal relationships. Like, for example, Levy, the ship's AI, is dealing with, well, she's almost human in a lot of ways. Levy is. And she ends up sort of having a crush or some sort of relationship. Lovey, you know, is it Jinx? She's kind of like hooked in with Jinx. Those two are sort of a thing, even though she's AI and he's not. They have a really interesting relationship. And eventually Sissix, who is not human, she's Andrisk, which means she's sort of like, she has, you know, she's bipedal.
Reptilian with feathers, yes.
Yeah, she's bipedal, but she's reptilian, but she also has feathers. And she ends up sort of forming a relationship with Rosemary. So much to, you know, which was kind of a really sweet way that these two start interacting. So you have like different kinds of relationships and different sorts of bonds. And it's just watching this unfold in the context of this road trip to the wormhole is really, really interesting. And like Ashby's relationship with his partner, who is also not human.
Mm-hmm. And from a species that really does not approve of interspecies relationships.
Right.
And the kind of the rigmarole they have to go through to keep that on the down low. But when that starts to break down, like what is more important, you know? The taboos or the relationship and the bond that they have with each other.
Yeah, that was really interesting watching his relationship with her unfold and what they've had to do over the years to keep that thing hidden from mostly from her. From her species, from her not people. From his. Yep. So anyway, it ends up being an exploration of relationships and characters, as well as a task to complete. And that is something that you, I mean, space opera is character driven. The best space opera is. That's, I've always said that. But it's rare to see that it's a space opera that is completely character. It's like, that's like what this is. It's a character study. And I loved it. It's like a really quirky, refreshing take, and the world building is phenomenal. Her descriptions are freaking amazing. You're just sucked in from page one. You know, I mean, Lise was like, oh, you have to read this book. And I'm like, oh my God, not another big ass huge book. Are you kidding me? She's like, no, for real. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, whatever. So,
well, and I wanted you to read it so you could read the second one, because I love, love, love this book. But the second one, A Closed and Common Orbit, like seriously blew my mind.
Okay, I'm like halfway through. Should I be like mind blown yet? Or I'm already, my mind is already kind of blown, but does it blow even more?
Oh, it does.
Okay, well, back to back to long way to the Angry Planet. I just love this crew. I mean, the way that they support each other and their little, they have fights, they have issues with each other.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like Corbin is a pain in the ass.
Oh my God.
I mean, he's indispensable. The ship doesn't run without him.
Right.
But like Ashby is really the only one who can really kind of stand him, and everyone else is just sort of like, ugh.
It's true.
They're but when shit goes down with him, like everyone steps up, you know? And I just, I love that kind of stuff, because it's like that's when you see that this is not just a crew, it's a family. Because every family has someone who like drives you up the frickin' wall. But when push comes to shove, you have their back against all comers, you know? Even though you might cheerfully strangle them the next day, if someone else like wants to lay a finger on them, it's like, fuck off. No.
Like, this no, is only my I pain get in the ass. To strangle them.
Exactly. And like the relationship between Kizzy and Jinx, you know, the two techs. Oh,
yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, who are like best buds ever, and who probably shouldn't be working together without supervision.
Oh my God, right? She said that. Becky Chambers said that about Kizzy. She said, I knew Wayfarer needed an engineer, but I didn't want one of those Starfleet professionals who could rewrite the book on engineering. I wanted someone who maybe failed their test the first time around. My thinking was, if everything was exploding, who is the last person you'd want fixing it?
Yeah.
The answer was this person, and that's where Kizzy came from. She's based on an artist that the author used to know.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, Kizzy is just, she doesn't take anything seriously, but man, when the chips are down, she's going to give it her all. And that's the thing with her. She gives everything her all, whether it's working on this thing or, like, getting drugged out while watching, like, stupid sports matches or, you know, just goofing off with Jenks. She's there, like, all in all the time.
You know who her favorite character is?
Who?
Sissix.
Really?
Isn't that cool?
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I love about Sissix is that you have this dichotomy about, like, the way she's raised and how her people are versus, you know, how she's forced to deal with this, you know, crew of people who aren't her people. And, you know, the realization that Rosemary goes through when she's like, oh, shit. Like, Sissix sees us as part of the family, but there's part of the book where they actually go and visit her family, and Rosemary gets to see, like, exactly what Sissix is doing without by deciding to be on the Wayfarer crew. You know, I mean, because this, the Andrisks are just, like, incredibly, like, these incredibly close-knit family groups, but they're chosen family groups. And so everyone, like, is going to be boning half the time or just, like, hanging out. And they're, like, really touchy-feely, even, you know, if they're not doing each other in a way that is just not a thing that, that humans or the other, like, alien races on the ship will do. And so that Sissix has chosen to, like, forego that in favor of, like, her Wayfarer family is really touching.
That was a really, really... You're right. Touching chapter. Chambers said that the first character she wrote was Sissix, and she was world building and kind of inventing alien races, and Sissix appeared, and the rest of the characters kind of spiraled from her. So I got that sense reading The Long Way, that there was, like, Sissix was sort of a fulcrum around where the other characters seemed to sort of kind of, you know, but I loved, you know, again, there's 9 point of view stories in here. I loved getting each point of view so that we could determine where in that group of family the character stood and what they were dealing with personally and how that affected their dealings with everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, even the most unlikable character, Corbin, you still end up, like, learning more about his story. And you really feel for the guy in a way that, you know, when we were first introduced to him, I didn't think would be possible.
Same. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, he's such a dick. Yeah.
She said he's based on a difficult former colleague of mine.
What about Ohan? What did you think about Ohan?
Ohan was fascinating. I can't even really describe what Ohan might even look like, but y'all, Ohan's the navigator when they're and comes into play when they're doing wormholing. And I'm not even sure how to describe how Ohan operates during those times. Maybe you have a better sense of that, of how to really convey what Ohan's role is during the wormholing.
Yeah, so he is their navigator.
Or is it Shear? And,
I'm sorry. They.
Yeah, let's use they with Ohan.
They. Right, because now I'm accidentally spoilering things. Oops. Sorry, guys. Ohan. Ohan, for most of the book, is referred to as they, which does not indicate, is not like a gender indicator, but a fact that Ohan and Ohan species see themselves as, they're not individuals, they're like, they're pluralities. As young beings, they're infected with this virus that they call the Whisperer, which allows them to, like, do just this insane, like, math and to kind of almost sort of unravel some of the secrets of the universe. And so as a navigator, when they're doing this wormhole stuff, they are invaluable because they can see what's happening in this really unstable space as it's happening, and then direct the ship accordingly so that they don't end up just getting sucked into this, like, unstable layer sort of between space.
Yeah, they can actually watch this unfold in real time, but also do like computations and algorithms to help predict where to go with it at the same time. It's like mind blown.
Yeah. The downside of the virus, unfortunately, is that it really limits the lifespan of the host. So, you know, it's like their brains get completely unlocked, but at the expense of this much shortened lifespan. And, you know, for Ohan, it's not... Ohan is not separate from the virus. The virus is not separate from Ohan. They are one. They are they.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And when their body starts to break down...
Their minds start to go, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of sad.
Yeah. And once again, the crew kind of rallies around. And I'm not going to talk much more about this because we're going to get way into spoiler territory. But it's really lovely the way that kind of unfolds also.
Mm-hmm. And there's a backstory to Ohan as well. And we see kind of an interesting development in terms of that species and the role of the virus and the host towards the end of the book, which I thought was really interesting and quite a new plot intro. Like, what? Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and there's a whole sort of ethical line that pulls through that sort of that mini arc. You know, it's like what are the ethics of this on both sides, from Ohan's side and from those who are, you know, who care about them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's just that was handled really nicely.
Mm-hmm. And it raises a lot of really interesting questions about culture and mm-hmm. and the traditions of cultures. And does that make something ethical or moral just because it's a tradition? You know, right. So that was something that I found myself thinking about when Ohan was getting iller. You know,
mm-hmm.
about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and what do those of us on the outside, what sort of obligation do we have? You know, I mean, there's this thing that's happening and it goes counter to everything in somebody else's culture. What are their obligations to the other person, to the other party, to themselves, to their own culture, to the other culture? You know, all of those things that have to be sort of thought about very carefully, I'd say,
mm-hmm.
before you'd want to even think about meddling in any of it.
Right, exactly. And that comes up, too, in terms of Jenks and Lovey. Jenks mm-hmm. wants to take Lovey's, the AI that is the ship, that is the Wayfarer, and put her in a human suit
or an android body.
An android suit. You know, so that mm-hmm. they can interact as humanoids. What's the ethics there? You know, because technically it's illegal to do that, as
right.
you know, the author points out. And it doesn't mean it's not done, obviously, but what are the ethics involved here? And I'm not going to go further with that storyline because that gets into major spoilers that we need for the second book. But that's another issue that Jenks is grappling with, because he's a human, so he has a different take on things. Mm-hmm. And it was just really fascinating how this all plays out.
Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, and Jenks is another example, because Jenks has dwarfism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a time and place where, you know, those sorts of physical deformities don't generally happen. But because of the circumstances around his birth and who his mother was, that was never, like, quote unquote, corrected for him. And it's not an issue for him. You know, he's never seen it as an issue.
That raises issues that we deal with today. That we grapple with, you know, I mean, well, if you could correct this thing, i.e. correct being sort of the operative term,
right.
Assume that, which then means that the person who has this condition is thus somehow not correct,
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell does that mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of really interesting layers to the characters and the stories. And, you know, I need to read it yet again and, like, kind of, like, really focus on those layers. Because you'll read the first time you read it, you're just, like, caught up. You're just like, oh, my God, this is so amazing. And then you think about it, and you're like, huh. And then you maybe go back and read certain parts, and you're like, wow, I missed that the first time. Really cool layer on that one. Like, the whole Ohan thing just got me thinking. Mm-hmm. Jinx's situation got me thinking about, you know, well, what? Who's to say you're not already perfect, as you are? He felt fine about who he is, but yet, yeah, it's really, really, it's deep, man. Fucking deep.
Yeah. Well, I can't say enough good stuff about this book. I mean, anyone who has any sort of interest in sci-fi and especially space opera has to read it.
You have to read it. I mean, and even if you're, like, not a fan because you're like, oh my God, hard science is going to scare me. No. This is the book for you to mm-hmm. really see a mastercraft storyteller at work and creating phenomenal characters. And that's really what stories are about. Characters. I mean, read this book. It's The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, Becky Chambers. It was released in 2015. It's available everywhere. So by all means, do yourselves a favor and read this. If you are a specfic fan, space opera fan, boom, do this. If you're not, seriously, give it a try. Just try it for us. And I really think, you're going to be converted. Just saying. All right. Any final words on that one, Lise, before we move into what the hell have we been doing recently?
Well, you know, the other good thing about reading this book is that there are two more after it, and they are out currently. So once you're hooked, there's more.
There's more. So, you know, you don't have to, like, call us and, you know, yell at us for, God damn it, you made me read that book and she hasn't written another one. Ah! No, she did. And they're out. So you're fine.
Yeah. So start yelling.
All right. All right, Lee. So what the hell have you been doing recently this week? What's your new thing?
Well, I wanted to geek out about a book called Ask Me Again, which is, it's a lesfic. It's a lesfic contemporary romance. By the author E.J. Noyes. And, yeah, lesfic contemporary romance is not generally my cup of tea. I don't usually read things that don't have, like, spaceships or dragons or explosions in them. Though this is a sequel. It's a sequel to Ask Tell, which actually does have some explosions in it because it takes place over in...
Yeah, that place.
In pre Don't Ask, Don't Tell Iraq, I believe. And so it's the first one is a romance between two female military surgeons in the sort of the tail end of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell days. And the romance is further complicated by the fact that one of the surgeons is the boss of the other.
Oops.
Yeah.
Drama.
Oh, absolutely. But it's a lovely story. And Ask Me Again is the sequel. And it's basically what happens, you know, after the fighting's over, when they're back home stateside. And one of the women is dealing with some really severe PTSD. Yeah. And that part is, it's so well done. But my God, if you don't like an angsty story, don't read this, because, like, seriously, it it felt like she was pulling my heart out through my diaphragm in parts. It was just sort of like, just that, like, gut-wrenching angst. It was so well written and it hurt so much.
Wow.
But it's a really, really good book. If you like, you know, military romances between women, definitely read Ask Tell and then read Ask Me Again. They're really, really well written. E.J. Noyes is the author.
Cool. Those sound really great. I mean, I wanted to read Ask Tell when you first started talking about it, and then I was like, got distracted. Ooh, shiny. Uh-huh. And so, but now I think I'm going to do it, but I don't know if I'm ready, if I'm in a good space to read Ask Me Again. Like, That sounds a little too intense right now.
It's very intense.
Okay.
In a good way, but yeah.
Yeah, but oh man. But I'm really glad though that there's that kind of representation going on, you know, because there's a lot of people who deal with that. My fluffy escapism for the week, because I was illin, was another show on the CW. I know. I can't quit those fuckers.
How much are they paying you to keep talking about them?
God damn it. Well, God damn it. But their sci-fi's got some good shows too, but right now they're all on hiatus. So, you know.
Ah, damn it.
Well, one just started up and maybe I'll talk about that one next week. Anyway, the show is Legacies, friends, and it's sort of another school for paranormals and a bunch of young people angst and crazy going on up in here. But it's kind of interesting in that the characters have sort of, it's a very female centric sort of plot lines and characters driven by a lot of female characters. And I'm not really sure how to describe this best, because some folks know already that it's kind of a spinoff of The Vampire Diaries. Some of you may have watched that, and The Originals. Some of you may have watched that. And basically this is the Salvatore School for the Young and Gifted. And it's home to Klaus Michelson's daughter, Hope. Some of you may remember Klaus. Alaric Salzman's twins, Lizzie and Josie, and a bunch of other young adults who all have these supernatural powers, or they're werewolves or vampires, and they need, you know, a special place to be guided and to develop teen angst and that sort of thing. The plots are fun. Each episode, the characters are really interesting the way they develop. You know, we're not talking stereotypical, like sort of Buffy knockoff here. We've got some deep stuff going on with some of the characters, and we've also got some female-female relationships.
Ooh.
And a lot of people of color in the cast, and which I really appreciate, especially when we're dealing with paranormals, because I'm like, why the hell are all the paranormal shows I watch, there's mostly white people? What is that about? But not here, and I love that. So a lot of shapeshifter drama, vampire drama, witches, a lot of cool witch stuff going on. And of course, the overarching, oh my God, the evil is trying to steal the ancient artifacts and release more evil. So it's sort of tropey, but the thing that keeps me coming back to this, and it just started running, friends, it just started in October, so the season one is still on the CW for streaming, is the characters. And the way that the young women are interacting and developing relationships with each other and developing sort of like found family within this network. And we have like a very complicated character in Hope, who is trying to do the right thing, or is she? You know, it's kind of like that. So she's all got anti-hero vibes. She also mm-hmm. has some really fucking cool powers, because she's a tri-brid. She's a witch, comes from witch lines, but also werewolf and vampire lines. So woman's badass. We got some serious badass women going on in this show. So yeah, it's kind of fluffy in some regards, but it's also just really good escapism. And so that's what I was watching this week, was Legacies on the CW.
Nice. It got you through?
It got me through. You know, I was been watching reruns of Supernatural. And then I was like, oh God, I need something different, something new. And I've already watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which was making me laugh. And I can't laugh mm-hmm. when I'm coughing, because it hurts.
Yeah.
So I went to Legacies, and some lines did make me laugh, because, you know, the dialogue is funny and snappy and witty. And there's one episode in particular, too, actually, that were just, I kid you not, girlfriend, I cried. It was really freaking moving, the subject matter and the acting. And I was just like, holy shit, I'm sitting here crying in a CW show. What the fuck? So anyway, yeah, it was fun. And if that's your cup of tea, again, you can stream it on the CW, because it's still the first season. So it's still running right now. Boom.
Yeah.
Got me through without too much coughing.
All you can ask for.
I know, right? All right, friends. Elise, got any final thoughts?
Just two. One, don't forget to look us up on our website, lesgeekout.com. And two, yes, we are on iTunes, but it's being a little weird. So that's something that we're working on trying to address. Mm.
Damn it, iTunes. What the hell?
I know. It's being bizarre. I'm hopeful that I'll be able to, like, bend their ear and be like, what did you do to our show?
I know, right? Also, Lee's, it's lesgeekoutcast.com.
What did I say?
Lesgeekout.com.
Oh, crap. That's Les okay. Geek Outcast. I picked the damn URL. I think I get it right.
Yeah. Y'all just think lesgeekoutcast.com.
Yeah.
Boom. And we're working on the iTunes thing. We're going to have to, like, have another round with them. Sorry, friends. But thank you for your patience. We love you. Okay. And next time, any famous thoughts for anyone?
Oh, shit. Thoughts?
Just stay tuned for more awesome. And if you guys have any ideas, please drop us a line, like things you want us to talk about or cover or whatever. You can find us on Twitter, LGO Podcast, and at our website. So we're around. Lee's and Andy Marquette are around. You can find us separately on Twitter as well. Lee's McTague, Andy Marquette. This has been Les Geek Outcast, the podcast for us because we're geeks, to talk about geekly things.
Geekly, bi-weekly.
There you go. Boom. So everybody take care of yourselves, and we hope you have a great 2 weeks. Later. Oh my god, I was almost coughing.
Ah, jeez. Drink some more. Drink.
Mm.
Chug.
Y'all, I'm chugging sparkling water. It's not what you think.
No, it really isn't.
I'm on antibiotics. I can't do the other stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't want to get pregnant. Those antibiotics will fuck with your birth control, man. You better watch out.
Awkward. That awkward moment when you get pregnant on antibiotics. Holy shit. Thoughts I never had to worry about during my life. Thank God I never had to go on birth control for issues.
You know? Yep. Yeah, same here. My mom sent me off to college with condoms, and I think I ended up using them for water balloons.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
And on that note.
Oh, is that the condom talk means it's time to stop?
Holy shit. Oh god. Maybe we should talk about that one show.
Okay. Alright, well, I'm shutting it down.
Me too.